Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you, dear listener, from wherever you are. It's Friday, the 1st of July, and it's the very last working day of the week. I am Jane Ayeko Kumet in Bonn, Germany. Coming up in our program today, Tanzania's President John Pombe Magufuli has received praise for his fight against corruption, but his leadership style is now being questioned.
Just in the last few weeks, we have seen citizens who have been brought to court, maybe because they wrote something insulting on social media. That never used to happen.
Germany and Southern Africa launch a student exchange program in Bonn. We hear what the German students will be doing in Africa.
From mental health to mental health and people with disabilities to early learning development centers. So the volunteer that comes in from Germany will come in and work and engage in one of these community projects.
And in our human rights segment, a threat to the right to health as Ghana's blood bank runs dry. Stay tuned with me for the next 25 minutes for these reports.
Top story.
Depending on which part of the coin you turn, it could be bad or good. That's exactly the picture Tanzania's President John Pombe Magufuli is carrying. Nicknamed a bulldozer for his aggressive fight on corruption and mismanagement, Magufuli has earned praise at home and abroad. But a string of decisions like banning political rallies and a desire to restrict social media has led some to wonder whether he's turning into a dictator. Wanjiku Mwaura brings us more on that story.
In January this year, the government stopped the live broadcast of parliament proceedings, stating they could no longer afford it. Before this, there was the controversial Cybercrime Act that saw the creation of the Tanzanian Computer Emergency Response Team, or TCERT. The team was launched to monitor racist and xenophobic content online, child pornography and online impersonations, which are outlawed within the law. But civil rights groups have been hesitant to celebrate the law since they claim it also infringes on democratic rights provided for in the Constitution. Asha G. Adinale, a social media consultant and strategist who runs the Jamii Forum, a popular online political platform in Tanzania, explains the impact of this law.
Just in the last few weeks,
we have seen citizens who have been brought to court, maybe because they wrote something insulting on social media. That never used to happen. Since this law was enacted in April 2015, many social media users have been arrested for various related crimes. People using the internet are now more cautious about what they post on social media. Jiadinale thinks the law has gone too far.
It's not that we don't want the cybercrime law.
We want it there because some of the things which are being done online are not good, but some sections are not in favor of anyone. Isaac Habakuk Emily, a social media user, was arrested earlier this year for insulting the president in a post on Facebook that has since been deleted. He was sentenced to 3 years in jail or a fine of 7 million Tanzanian shillings, about $3,200. He was released after a plea by his attorney that allowed him to pay the amount in installments. He was expected to pay 3 million shillings by June 8, 2016, and the remaining amount by August 8, 2016. Last week, another social media user, Leonard Mulokozi Charuzi, was arrested for a message he sent on WhatsApp, a free and encrypted messaging platform that is quite popular in Tanzania. This is a worrying trend as people are becoming afraid to engage in political discussions online as their comments may be perceived to be anti-government. Jiadinale's website has also been contacted by authorities with regards to political comments.
Content posted on the platform
is posted by people who are anonymous. So what happens is they will summon us to give up information about a certain person with a certain ID username, to give out their IP address or email address, which will reveal their true identity.
Last week, the president also announced there will be no more political rallies allowed in Tanzania until 2020.
According to reports, he asked politicians to state their affairs in parliament. This was not well received by opposition parties. This caught people by surprise, as Gwandumi Mwakatobe, a political analyst in Tanzania, tells us.
I expected that he would also say he will protect freedom of expression and the right to free assembly, because there is nothing that doesn't include politics.
Even as freedom of assembly and expression are being threatened, civil action is also increasing. A group of 11 citizens have filed a petition in the High Court seeking an order to reverse the government restrictions on live broadcasts of parliamentary proceedings. The date for the hearing will be set on July 15th.
Wanjiku Mwaura reporting. Tundu Lissu, an opposition politician and fierce critic of President Magufuli, was in court on Thursday. Lissu is accused of calling on Tanzanians to rise up against Magufuli's creeping dictatorship. So how is Tanzania's democracy faring under Magufuli? Crispin Mwakidewo put this question to Benson Bana, a political analyst and lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam.
I tend to think that President John Pombe Magufuli is doing the right thing in terms of trying to clean the public service, to weed out corrupt individuals in the public service, to deliver the promises he made to the people during the 2015 general elections last year. He's now doing the right thing, focusing on the rural poor, focusing on the have-nots, trying to make sure that the rule of law prevails in the country.
I think we all agree, or most people agree, that he's doing a very good job on fighting corruption. But when it comes to rights, I think there are concerns, like, for example, this ban on political rallies. That would be an infringement on the right to assembly. And then there's also the restriction of social media.
This is a law that was passed in Parliament, and our representatives, our lawmakers, we are all involved in passing that law. And we know that maybe the law may have some anomalies, but in its entirety, this is not a draconian law. It is neither obnoxious. There are some concerns. Those concerns could be easily addressed through roundtable negotiations, and I understand, to the best of my knowledge, that the minister was in charge of communication had invited all aggrieved parties to sit together with government with a view to addressing all anomalies, inconsistencies, and some flaws that may be inherent in that law.
Right, Mr. Bana. Now, there is an article that was posted by The Citizen, and it reports that the opposition Civic United Front, CUF, plans to sue President John Pombe Magufuli for crimes against humanity committed by the police in Pemba and Unguja. Is the opposition just bluffing, or are these allegations something that President Magufuli should be concerned about?
I think the president, he took oath of office to safeguard the Constitution of the United Republic of Tanzania. And Tanzania, like any other government which upholds the basic values of democracy, respects the doctrine of separation of power and checks and balances in government. Whoever is aggrieved by the conduct of Tanzania Police Force and its officers should at least go to the right and appropriate authority for redress. I think the Civic United leaders should feel free to go to court or use some other means, move a private motion in the Union Parliament to challenge the conduct of the Tanzania Police Force, and I think they will be listened to and the proper action will be taken.
Crispin Mwakidewo was speaking to Tanzanian political analyst Benson Bana in Dar es Salaam.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
German's Minister for Economic Cooperation and Development, Gerd Müller, on Thursday launched a German-African student exchange program right here in Bonn. Germany is ranked fourth as the most preferred country for African students, South Africa being the first, followed by the UK and then US. DW's Chimwemwe Padatha attended the launch of the initiative. He's been talking to my colleague Crispin Mwakidewo about it.
The exchange program called the African German Youth Initiative is a multisectoral initiative of the German government and the African Union Commission, which is aimed at enhancing youth exchange between German and countries in sub-Saharan Africa. And now that the program has been launched, a number of youths from Southern Africa will be coming to German, and some from German are the ones who will be going to countries in Southern Africa, countries like Tanzania, countries like South Africa, and some from Southern Africa are the ones to be coming in German. And the program that has been launched is just in a pilot phase, and two countries are the ones that are being implemented so far. That's to say Tanzania and South Africa, that's in Southern Africa. For more on how the program will benefit youths in Southern Africa, here is Rowena Stewart, the manager at the Southern Africa Woolworths Network, SON, who also attended the launch of the program.
SON has different partner organizations engaged in different things. So from mental health to mental health and people with disabilities, to early learning development centers in terms of education, in terms of rendering services, you know, children that have been abandoned due to AIDS, looking after them. So what we do is we have a network of partners that are engaged in civil society to help. So the volunteer that comes in from Germany will come in and work and engage in one of these community projects. So as a young person, they get in a direct exposure and engagement as to the need and an education as to what is taking place.
Rowena Stewart, manager at the Southern African Woolworths Network. And what is the criteria for selecting these students from Africa who are to come to Germany?
The selection criteria of the youths who will be coming to Germany will mainly be based on the non-governmental organizations who the German government will be working with. And in this case, I talked to one of the implementers of the program from South Africa, and she was saying that in this program, the non-governmental organizations in South Africa are the ones who will be connecting with the government in Germany to select youths from the less privileged families, those who have a poor background that they cannot afford to make a life on their own. And the organizations are the ones who will be getting the individuals, the youths from various communities to bring them here in Germany. I also had a chance to talk to Eric Crispin Nyoni, a Tanzanian who took part in the Nord-Zuid exchange program at a school in Hamburg.
Well, somebody was asking me, what made you come to Germany? Did you run away from war? Or did you run away from hunger? Is your country starving? And so this was an opportunity for me to tell them, like, for example, I'm coming from Tanzania, a country which is not having war at all. And it's we're not starving from hunger. We have plenty of food. So we had very long discussion concerning what is the reality in Africa and what they know. So I had a chance to answer all their questions, and they were very much interested, and some of them even visited me in Africa, and they still want to have more conversation with their young children and the young people in Germany so that I can change the perspective.
Eric Crispin Nyoni ending that talk between Crispin Mwakidewo and Chimwemwe Padatha.
Human rights.
Whereas we would like to think that it's everyone's right to get standard medical care, it is not always the case. In Ghana, it's becoming increasingly difficult for patients who require blood transfusions to access it. This is because the country is facing a serious shortage of blood donations. As Isaac Kalechi found out, the shortage has to do with people's perceptions about donating blood.
In the accident ward in the Kolebu Teaching Hospital in Accra, patients appear to be struggling for their lives. Their relatives have to make alternative arrangements for blood transfusions. The country's blood donor service estimates that 50% of maternal deaths occur due to a lack of blood. The service believes that if only 1% of Ghanaians would donate blood, the situation would not be so dire. Ni Ade Clegg is a popular morning show host in Ghana who had a frightening experience when his wife went into labor and had to be operated on.
What happens is that normally they will not give you the blood because storage is an issue. Got in touch with somebody who I knew, but this time around I couldn't get him, so it was difficult. But a friend of mine, a doctor friend, called someone at 37, and that's what saved us, because I was on radio live at the time that the surgery was going on. It so happened that I was on air, I was getting calls, I was talking at the same time, I had to put off the microphone just in order to respond, because apparently my wife was losing a lot of blood. The doctor was beginning to panic, and that's how come they got the blood for her to transfuse her.
But the director of Blood Bank Services for the Southern Area, Dr. Ebo Akwa, says that access to blood should not be difficult for most people.
Usually at public hospitals, a few private ones, by and large, if depending on your stock, you should have access. The problem is the major centers, the referral centers, where the demand is generally so high that it outstrips what we're able to supply them. But otherwise, if you were to walk into a hospital that has a relationship with the blood service, all things being equal, especially around this time, you should have blood.
Niade says this level of access exists only on paper, and if you do not have connections, people could die if they don't get blood on time.
What about someone who doesn't have classmates who are medical doctors? The general question is, how then do we get blood if we need it? I think it's quite a worrying scenario. So I think people go through all manner of things. And you know, in all these scenarios, it's because I knew people that I got this blood. But I'm sure many people who don't know anybody will have to endure a lot. We don't have a very clear system, and it's very worrying.
The blood bank is now revising its strategy to stock up enough blood during times of peak demand. Dr. Akwa says that the strategy is to encourage more people to donate blood voluntarily.
People donate blood again and again. A lot of people. It's just that they donate blood when they are aware that their cousin, their auntie, their wife needs blood. Through radio programs, especially when people see others giving blood for apparently no reason at all, that raises awareness.
Some people I spoke to at a health center gave a gloomier picture of the attitudes of Ghanaians towards blood donation.
The minute 2 years, I'll go retirement, so now I can't do that again. Because of my age, like if not because of that, I would do it. Maybe it will hurt me.
I've donated blood about 3 times. The 3 times, that was my sister who came and delivered at maternity. Right now, I can't donate again.
Ghana is only able to collect 40,000 units of blood despite the demand for blood hovering around 100,000 units annually. It is clear that unfortunately, many people will be forced to fight for their lives because access to blood is not available.
Isaac Kalechi in Accra. You're still listening to DW Africa Link from Bonn, Germany. We've heard about the shortage of blood in Ghana. Let's now talk about shortage of water in Kenya. Many residents in low-income households are often not connected to the water systems. This leaves them at a risk of contracting waterborne diseases since they mostly draw water from polluted rivers. This is where water kiosks come in. As Robbie Russell reports, water kiosks have made a huge difference in these settlements.
Water splashes into the yellow plastic container. It's fresh, clear, and above all, clean. As every day, Esther Wangare is filling her container at the village water tap. She carries her baby in a sling on her back.
It has improved so much. Before, we took water from the river that was dirty, from ducks and dogs too. Now we have clean water, it helps us a lot. And it's not far away and it's not expensive. So we're happy.
Esther lives in a small slum in the Rift Valley, at the foot of the Ngong Hills. Her home is a corrugated iron hut with no plumbing and no toilet. Every day, she walks to the little blue and white striped hut with a large water tank on its roof. Over the counter, a sign reads, "Water Kiosk." Local residents look after the operation themselves and make sure that everything works. Like Albert Mowalola.
Their children are happy because, they are well up to meet their water needs in their homes in an available situation and available time. So most of the disease infections went down, I would say.
The water comes from a borehole not far from the slum. The water kiosk belongs to the local water provider. It cost 10,000 euros to set up. The money was provided by the Poverty Fund, which is supported by the Kenyan government, the EU, and aid funds from Germany. Dirk Schaefer is proud of the water kiosk project, which he helped to set up. He is a development coordinator for GIZ, the German Agency for International Cooperation.
The kiosks are the best option. It's a quick solution, giving people access to clean water at a price they can afford. The kiosks are the best way.
Schaefer's office is in the same building as the Kenyan Ministry for Water. The location is important because most of his work is on a governmental level. In 2010, clean water and sanitation were enshrined as a human right in the Kenyan constitution. it was vital to reorganise the water industry with private providers, sound regulation and the support of the Poverty Fund. Only if structures are set up well can development aid have a lasting impact. Schaefer estimates that around 1 million people have already benefited.
They have fewer costs for treating diarrhea, and before, people paid around 20 euros a month for water. Now it's just 2 euros.
That report was compiled by Robbie Russell.
Your say.
We do value your opinions and thoughts, and so this is the time to hear what you make of the stories and articles we've been covering this week. Jen Nyengi and Chimwemwe Padatha, this with your say.
Well, let's begin with a story by our reporter based in Dakar, Senegal, on how some African migrants in Europe decided to return home after going through hardships in foreign lands.
That's right. Emmanuel Landlas interviewed one of the returnees who described to her how life in Spain turned out to be hell on earth. But he is happy after 11 years he was assisted to travel back to Senegal.
Richard Meyer is of the view, I wish these stories could be told more and more in African countries through the media and even social media so that people are aware of what awaits them in Europe after taking very dangerous trips.
Andrew Stammann is of similar opinion and he said this was one voice in a sea of millions. He goes on to say if his voice could be heard, we could save many lives.
Absolutely, but Motsi Zamo believes the man who returned back to Dakar represents only a small number of migrants who would agree to go back home after reaching Europe. He says the main hindrance is because many migrants fear becoming a laughingstock when they return home empty-handed. Moving on, a ruling by a South African court that President Jacob Zuma should now face corruption charges against him dating back in the 90s generated lots of comments.
Seeking to explain his view, Nicholas Obute said, "Everything about this man Zuma is controversial. We need a visionary leader to unite the country, and he believes this is just not the right man."
Well, Faustin Bujashi from Tanzania got in the conversation saying, let him face his day in court so that he can be an example to other African leaders.
But Maneno Lubigisa, also from Tanzania, was not impressed by Bujashi's comment on the court ruling. He says, Tanzanians never cease to amaze me. They are quick to comment on corruption happening in another country when this is a burning issue in their own country.
Well, that reminds me of this saying, first remove the plank from your own eye, then you can see properly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. What else do we have, Chimwemwe?
We also received a letter from John Samvula from Musanze, Rwanda.
Please take us through. What is he saying?
He says, good job. I find DW News very accurate and the programs very informative. We have even formed a DW listeners club here in Rwanda.
Awesome. Thank you so much, John, for writing to us from Rwanda. And we assure you we'll get even much better. To remind you, we appreciate all your comments, be it on social media or using other means to communicate to us. Keep them coming.
Jen Nyengi and Chimwemwe Padatha with that your say. Remember, you can get in touch with AfricaLink with your comments, suggestions and opinions by either sending a text message to country code +491609575910. You can also send us an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to AfricaLink DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. And before we wind the show, here is a reminder of our main stories. There is growing growing concern about the style of leadership of Tanzania's president. And Germany and Africa have launched a student exchange initiative, whereas Ghana is facing a shortage of blood donations. We've come to the end of the show. Thank you for being such a good company throughout the week. And on behalf of Africa Link production team, Oli Tang and Junior, Eunice Wanjiru, and our sound technician, Claudia Breiter, thank you and have a nice weekend.